You may be seated. Grace to you and peace from Christ, who is love. Being a new parent is always challenging, and sometimes it's even wonderful. Like most first-time parents, as we were having our first child, I imagined raising that child to be intelligent and caring, compassionate, fearless, loving, and beautifully formed in the faith. Sort of like Princess Diana and the Dalai Lama all rolled into one. But without any of the jagged edges or the paparazzi. It was a short dream that lasted right up until the day our very first, very nearly perfect progeny learned to talk. She learned a word that for a short while dashed my dreams of the perfect child. And that word was mine. That word showed up at the most embarrassing moments. In playgroups, as another child innocently grabbed for one of her dolls. Mine, she would say. Food, toys, clothes, whatever. It didn't matter. She never missed an opportunity to remind others of what belonged to her, whether it belonged to her or not. Mine, she would say. Her childlike innocence and joyfulness had given way to a childish selfishness as she explored somewhat forcefully the limits of the world around her and laid claim to her part of that limited world. Mine! Mine! For her parents, it was uncomfortable and even appalling. Our dreams of the perfect, compassionate, spiritually deep child dissolved before our very eyes into a bratty, selfish toddler whose favorite word had one syllable. Mine. This stage only lasted a little while, but it was painful. It was an important, if somewhat frustrating, time of development for both her and for us. I was reminded of that part of our life when I read this morning's gospel. For a moment, Jesus almost sounds like a toddler shouting, "Mine!" as a woman comes to him for help. Honestly, we should be shocked by Jesus' response to a request that has been made to Jesus many times before, to cast out a demon, to bring healing, to help her daughter release this unclean spirit. But she is not of Jesus' tribe. She's a Gentile, a Syrophoenician. And this Jesus, who had declared in an earlier chapter that he was sent first to the lost children of Abraham, says something shocking. Let the children be fed first, for it is not fair to take the children's food and give it to the dogs. Mine, I hear in my head. It's mine. This loving, kind, fully spiritually formed Jesus turns out for a moment to be as prejudiced and as selfish as everyone else. I want to name this because I think there is very little value in explaining this moment away as something too uncomfortable to read or to ponder. Jesus' remark. It's too important to dismiss as a teaching moment or a literary device, as some commentators have done, that didn't think it reflects the true Jesus. Frankly, it should make us uncomfortable. And I think Mark intends it to. I think it's no accident that one of the gospel writers simply chose to leave this story out altogether. It should make us uncomfortable to read and to ponder Jesus' remark. It's as if he says, "I will not waste this gift on someone I see as little better than a dog." But the woman is undeterred. Her persistence and quick thinking turns, she turns to Jesus and wants him to see her. And his whole mission in a different light. "Sir," she says, "even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." Then Jesus said to her, "For saying that, you may go. The demon has left your daughter." So she went home and found the child lying in a bed, and the demon gone. It may be important for us to lay aside our expectations of the perfect Jesus and see holiness made whole not by power or privilege, but by the persistence of a woman whose love for her daughter led her to challenge the rabbi, the healer, the revered Jewish prophet, and claim for herself, her daughter, and for all of her people the love of God who creates all things and loves all things. Her daughter is healed, and I think so is Jesus, both in that moment. We stand in need of such healing these days. As I read the headlines and watch the news on television, I am struck by how often I hear the words, "my, mine, and I." It is a mantra attached to everything from mask wearing to firearms to abortion. "I have the right not to wear a mask. I have a right to carry a gun. I will exercise my God-given right to say or do whatever I please." What I believe about everything trumps yours because it's mine. 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 For some, it seems to relent individual rights for the common good or the common cause is like throwing a children's food to the dogs. Why would you do that? The pendulum of social discourse has shifted in many ways to a toddler-like state of mind, only with sharper tongues and finely honed legal teams ready to spring into action should you dare to suggest that their clients' individual rights might be diminished even for a second. As individuals, it appears that some among us are happy to spit in the eye of anyone who contradicts or limits us or suggests that we might have some responsibility for our neighbor or even our own behavior. It seems strange and deeply disturbing to me that we have people here in Hawaii flinging anti-Semitic epithets at Lieutenant Governor Josh Green for trying to implement a policy aimed at literally saving the lives of the most vulnerable in our society. Once again, blame the Jew. It's heartbreaking. How dare you, they say, take what is mine? Is this a sign of times to come? Is this the society, the community that we imagine for our children, for our grandchildren, or for ourselves? Is this the world we lay claim to as our own? It is no accident in the story that follows the healing of the Syrophoenician woman's daughter. People bring to Jesus a blind man whose speech is compromised. In one moment, Jesus nearly spits in the eye of a Gentile woman. And in the next, people bring to Jesus a blind man. And he lays his hands on him and spits on his finger and touches his tongue, and the man is healed. And I think so is Jesus. It is as if Jesus' encounter with the Gentile woman had freed him to see his obligation and his freedom to serve all people, everyone, Gentile and Jew. That he could bring healing to everyone and put away his mission for his own people in favor of the healing of the world. This powerful gospel moment that appears in Mark, at least for me, is a turning point in that gospel and in the ministry of Jesus and for all of us. Perhaps in insisting on our individual rights, we have lost sight of our communal obligations. In proclaiming our own freedom, we have lost sight that our freedom is simply freedom to serve our neighbor. Jesus sets us free from our demons so that we can live in love with one another. Jesus clears out our eyes so that we can see God in our neighbor. Jesus loosens our tongues so that our voice can ring clear in the proclamation of God's love and that God's love is for everyone. For all the earth, for the whole cosmos, God's love is for everyone, abides for everyone. How very different that is than the klaxon call that we hear for my rights, my freedom, my life. What a wonderful gift God gives us as Jesus, in Jesus, to be healed of our need for everything to be mine alone, but shared with one another as a gift of God. Our rights, our freedom, our faith, our love. What good is it, James says, brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith and do nothing with it? Our first child went through a difficult and thankfully brief mine stage. It was not long before she was able to see herself and her things as part of a greater whole. Mine faded away. And she began her journey to become not the ideal child that we imagined, but a child of God. I pray that in the forgiveness and the love of God, we too will be healed, our demons cast out, our eyes opened to God's deep and abiding gift of love, and that we will always embrace that free gift for the sake of the world. Go, Jesus says, your daughter is healed. and so are we. Amen. Let us join together as we sing the hymn of the day. Please rise as you're able.